everybody. Grab your snack, grab your drink, turn your radio or phone up. We are back with Chop On. Thank you to everybody for joining us, and we hope that you enjoy the show this week. We appear every Wednesday in the U.S. at 8:30 p.m. EST, Thursday mornings in India and Australia at 6 a.m. IST and 10 a.m. ACST. You can find us on Twitter and Instagram at Chop On Pod. Our link tree is attached to those pages in the bio, so you can find the right podcast platform for you to listen to our show. Once you find that platform, please like, rate, review, but most importantly, make sure you subscribe so you don't miss the milk and cookies that is cricket and wrestling. My name is Rajiv, and I am here with the one and only Bharat Sundaresan. Hello, brother. How are you doing this week?
Well, I've blown my knee out, Rajiv, so I've been limping around and dragging my leg, around the house and everywhere else. So apart from that, I've been doing excellently well. Thank you so much. And I can't believe this is episode 10.
Episode 10.
Imagine that. We've been doing this for 10 weeks, 10 straight weeks, that without a break, which is just sensational. I have to admit, I think the longest run I've had with a podcast. So there you go. You're making things happen for me, Rajiv.
I am honored. And not only have we run this for 10 weeks in a row, we had a super over. If you have not checked that out, please go into the archives and check that out. Brother, how did you blow your knee out? Were you running between the wickets or doing a back body drop? What were you doing?
Oh, well, I wish I was doing a back body drop. I wish I could do that. But no, I mean, neither. I'm not much of a runner. It's one thing I'm not really fond of. But I think I hurt it while doing plunges. Yeah, I mean, for as strong a base as I do have, my legs are sensational. I have a very disappointing butt. And like, you know, maybe the lunges were a part of trying to, you know, get something going there. Yeah, I'm all face, I'm all legs, but no butt, Rajiv. It's not a great combination, though. It shouldn't matter anymore since I've been married now for 8 years, but I think it does matter. So maybe I overdid it. And it's been, and I haven't got the chance to get an x-ray done or anything. Like, you know, Australia is sort of starting to go into panic again. The virus is back. Many of the major cities, Sydney, Brisbane, Perth, they're all in lockdown. Melbourne's just getting out of a lockdown. Adelaide and South Australia, we've shut all our borders. So, yeah, I don't think they won't want to look at some fellow's dodgy knee right now. But, yeah, hopefully I'll get it fixed. It's already better, which has also meant that I've not been able to listen to a lot of podcasts, which is I generally do it while walking the dog. So, yeah, but it's getting better. It's getting better.
Well, wishing you a speedy recovery, brother. And hey, you're not just all legs, you're also all hair. So I'll give you that one. And if you, the listener, have never listened to us before, we are going to take topics related to cricket and wrestling and discuss them back and forth. If we end a topic before the 5 minute mark, then great. Otherwise, we're going to cut ourselves off at 5 minutes. We know we have listeners that love cricket but don't understand wrestling, or they love wrestling and maybe they don't understand cricket. So we also live to enlighten our listeners by having a term or a rule of the week and also a history lesson, which, brother, I found one this week that I think you're going to find very, very interesting. So before we get there, are you ready to rotate the strike?
Should I call one or should I call two? Let's do it, Rajiv.
I will present topics and we will go back and forth discussing these. Here is topic number one. There have been more WWE releases. WWE released the following 13 superstars this week: Killian Dane, the Bollywood Boys, Sunil and Samir Singh, Marina Shafir, Arturo Ruas, Kurt Stallion, Fandango, Tyler Breeze, Everrise, which is Chase Parker and Matt Martell, Tony Nese, Arya Daivari, and August Gray. It has been reported that these releases are also part of the ongoing budget cuts, like the other recent departures. Brother, did any of these releases surprise you? And do you feel that there are many more releases to come? I will start the timer now.
Well, I'll be very, very honest with you, Rajiv. There are some names in there which I am not aware of. And it says a lot more about my ignorance than, how good they are as talents. I don't know about you. I haven't followed a lot of them. A lot of them are from the NXT show, if I'm not wrong.
I think 205 Live is a lot of them.
205 Live as well. Yeah, that's another show that I don't even know whether we get it on Fox here, but I have not seen much of those, much of that. The Bollywood boys, well, we've spoken about how Jinder Mahal has started coming out to the ring with, and now he's being featured regularly as well with two real Indians, if that makes sense, and two guys who you have said look like they look like guys who can play that bouncer role for Jinder before, of course, they eventually turn on him and become the real deal. Sameer and Sunil had a role. I thought they had a good run with Jinder when he was the modern day Maharaja. And I think the WWE have used them really well to connect with the WWE India market. They just seem much more fluent in Punjabi than Jinder Mahal does. and they look like people who you can connect with as well. So that was good. I was really surprised that Fandango was still around. I remember seeing him, his debut, like many years ago when I quite never really got his character. I don't know about you, like the whole dancing and when Disco Inferno used to dance on WCW Nitro, you at least could think of it as a goofy character. With Fandango and Summer Rae, if I'm not mistaken, was the one, was his valet. I just didn't get it. Like, you know, how do you go from dancing like that and then to wrestling? I don't know. Maybe I never got it, but I think it was him and Tyler Breeze who had that. They became the fashion police of sorts. Like they played that gimmick, which I thought was much better than the original Fandango gimmick. But Tyler Breeze always came across as a great talent. Tyler Breeze and Bo Dallas were two guys I thought who would really make it big, but of course that never happened. And I guess. I do think there are going to be more releases coming up. The debate's already on. Conrad Thompson's convinced that they're selling. Eric Bischoff is convinced they're not selling. For now, I'm still sticking with the Bischoff team. I don't think they're selling. It's just, but they are trying to kind of make their product crisper, prune out a lot of excess talent. We've heard their roster has been bloated for a long time, so not surprised, and I think there will be more coming through. But the best part though was a lot of people on the current roster taking to social media and congratulating a lot of these people who've been let go for the careers they've had and wishing them well for the future.
Yeah, I will agree that I don't think any of these releases were very surprising. I personally loved the Fandango character when he first debuted with Summer Rae. There was something about the theme song and the weird dance that the crowd was doing with it. I loved him, and I saw potential, but there was only so far you could go with a dancing character. Tyler Breeze, I really loved when he was in NXT. I liked the Fashion Police tag team that he did with Fandango because it was entertaining, but they weren't using him again. Here we go again. They weren't using him on the main roster as well as they were using him in NXT. And that just happens all the time. I think the biggest surprise for me was reading about the last time the Bollywood Boys had a match because I didn't know they were wrestling again. And the other big surprise for me was that 205 Live is still a thing. I think it's a WWE Network show, so maybe that's why you haven't seen it much over there. I do think that there's many, many more releases to come. I don't think WWE is selling, but a company, they're just being a company that's making room to do bigger things. If you're not going to use the talent, then you're just wasting your money. And I feel like the pandemic really made them realize that, hey, we have all of these people that we're either barely or not using, and we're paying them six figures every year. So why are we doing that when we could be using that money elsewhere? So let's cut the budget, because, you know, we just realize now with this pandemic, anything can happen and you never know what's coming.
Absolutely. Couldn't agree with you more.
And on our Super Over last week, we talked about the possibility of multiple matches to decide the World Test Championship final. Now let's add Virat Kohli to the list of people wanting a change to the format. The India captain echoed thoughts of his head coach Ravi Shastri and former skipper Sachin Tendulkar after his side were defeated by New Zealand in the inaugural World Test Championship final. And I quote, I'm not in absolute agreement of deciding the best test side in the world over the course of one game, to be very honest, Coley said. If it is a test series, it has to be a test of character over three tests, which team has the ability to come back into the series or totally blow away the other team. It can't just be pressure applied over 2 days of good cricket and then you suddenly are not a good test side anymore. I don't believe in that. He would go on to say later, I think historically all great series that you've seen in test cricket, you remember them over a period of three matches or five matches perhaps, but two teams going against each other and those series become memorable. Firstly, brother, we did talk about this on our Super Over about the thoughts of a multi-match test. So if people want to hear more about that, check out our archives. But my question here is, if Team India won the match, would Virat Kohli and all of these people be singing this tune?
Well, in the Indian cricket team's defense, Ravi Shastri did speak about this before they left, left India to go to England. So there was a press conference, joint press conference on Zoom, I remember, with Kohli and Shastri, which is generally the norm, and the pre-departure, pre-C as they call it. But he did talk about how there was a need for three matches. And like, you know, you said, we spoke about it last week in our Super Over. I strongly believe one match is good enough because it's a final. And would Virat Kohli have spoken about it if India had still won? I would like to believe yes, because having just seen how they function, Virat and Ravi Shastri together, it's a common theme amongst a lot of players. Like, you know, even from what I've heard, they do believe that, especially because the way I would look at it is India versus New Zealand, as good as New Zealand are, was Southampton, like, you know, I think I mentioned this in the Super Over as well, like gloomy English weather, the pitch really assisting the fast bowlers. What was it? Technically a neutral venue for India or New Zealand, very similar to New Zealand conditions. Maybe the MCG would have been better, but you know, that's only in hindsight, and it's very unfair to say that after New Zealand have won. Just having a series, like Siddharth, the actor, said, in three different conditions, and you correctly said three different conditions within the same country, would make for more interesting viewing. But I still believe that one-off knockout one-off final is the best way to go. And look, the fact is that one thing I do agree with Virat is, and I don't know why he even has to mention it, is that India lost an ICC final or lost a chance to win an ICC trophy. I don't think it takes away from how amazing a test team they are. I still think they are really deservedly number one alongside New Zealand now. And not because New Zealand just won the World Test Championship final, also because they beat England and England before that. So just like India beat Australia, New Zealand beating England at that time of the year as well, says a lot about this New Zealand team and why I believe they are the two strongest test teams in the world right now.
Well, I disagree. I think if India had won, then not only Team India, but all of India would be praising the fact that there is only one match. And I'm willing to bet that if India had won, nobody would even be questioning the format, really. I mean, we've talked before about how high up the BCCI is on the ICC scale as far as importance and money. And if New Zealand had lost, New Zealand themselves would have chalked it up to, we have to be a better test side and move on. But because the almighty India lost, is this the right format? I mean, I love Team India, obviously, and we talk about it often here on the show, I mean, because of my Indian roots. But, you know, this is a classic example of favoritism, not just within Team India, but as a whole, because it's not just Virat, it's not just Ravi Shastri or Sachin or Siddharth talking about it. It was blowing up Twitter about the fact that this should not be a one-match final. And I just think this is a classic example of favoritism and using your stroke to try to alter an already in place format. I mean, granted, this is a brand new tournament for cricket and things can be tweaked, but I just don't think if India had won this, it would be such a big deal for people.
Well, you make a very interesting point, Rajiv. It's possible. It's possible you would, like, they would have still made these points, but maybe in private, they wouldn't have been so public about it. But sure. Yeah, I mean, it's very similar to every time there is a toss and, you know, the losing the team that loses the toss, the captain that loses the toss, will always say, oh, it was a good toss to lose. Or he would always say, yeah, I mean, I would have done the opposite of whatever the opposition's asking to do. So these are, I guess, types of gamesmanship that do happen in sport. But in this case, I just have a feeling that because they mentioned it before they left as well, maybe they did. They do feel strongly that there should have been a three-match series, even though I don't agree.
But it also makes me wonder, since Ravi brought it up before they left, were they already talking about the fact that New Zealand has two test matches against England and we are just doing an intra-squad match or two?
You know what? Like, I would have said no if you had asked me this question 3 weeks back. But the fact that India are now asking for... there have been reports in CricBuzz, number one cricket website in the world. there have been reports that they've asked for... county games, because initially they were planning to continue having intra-squad matches. They have a massive squad over there in England before they prepare for that India-England test series. But since this match has happened, they are now asked for at least two or three warm-up games against the counties, which is generally the norm when you tour England, which tells you that now maybe without mentioning it, they do feel like New Zealand seem to have had that advantage of having played those tests. But yeah, I mean, the tone would have been very different if India had won. It would have just been back to how this is. India are embarking on this indomitable run. Nobody could touch them. But, well, that's the beauty of Indian cricket. It's like Bollywood, which you like, Rajiv. I've always said this. It's a Bollywood script. It cannot stay up for too long. We need to have the lows, and looks like we've had one already.
And we need to have the drama, just like all of the serials. And speaking of a little bit of drama, the inaugural edition of the Euro T20 Slam has been postponed for a second year in a row due to COVID-19. The board met recently and decided to move the launch to 2022. Cricket Ireland said in a release that the main reasons for postponement were stiffer logistical challenges posed by new variants of the coronavirus, along with the rescheduled IPL, which impinged upon the Euro T20 Slam's window. Warren Dutrom, chief executive at Cricket Ireland, would say, I quote, "Last year, we had agreed to tweak the structure of the competition in response to the pandemic, envisioning the event being held in one country alone to minimize travel and negotiate various quarantining requirements. You only have to look at the impacts of the evolving pandemic on established competitions like the IPL and PCL, I'm sorry, PSL, to see the complexity and uncertainty that still needs to be managed. While there may be a sense of disappointment for now, the further time now available will give the concept the best chance to succeed in the longer term." First of all, I did not know that Euro T20 Slam was a thing. So the question for this one is, having to postpone this a second year in a row, a big blow for the tournament. And do you think that postponing is the right thing to do? I don't think this is a big blow because there was no precedent for this tournament. It's going to be the inaugural season once it happens. So this gives them a lot more time to plan and to try to make this as big as it can be. If they tried to squeeze it in this year, I think that it would sink without a trace because you have the CPL, you have the IPL finishing, the World T20, and there's just much more going on that nobody outside of maybe Ireland would even watch this tournament. So postponing is the right thing to do, not only to get as many eyeballs as possible, but also with the new variants of the coronavirus in that part of the world, you want to keep your players, your coaches, your staff, your fans, everybody as safe as possible. So I say stay safe, use this time to prep for a bigger tournament, and I think that they may do okay next year.
Well, it's, yes, I mean, to start with, yeah, especially when you're talking about the Euro T20 Slam and the Euros are on, like the soccer Euros, which seems to be producing some incredibly exciting matches in the last two nights. I don't know how much of a soccer fan you are. I did ask you off air. But just seeing some highlights of Switzerland beating world champions France. And, I cannot wait for Cesaro this weekend on SmackDown. I'm sure he'll bring it up. I don't think they would have played the quarterfinal till then, so which will give him a chance to gloat about them beating France. It's just a pity that I don't know whether there is a out and out French wrestler right now on the WWE roster or the SmackDown roster. Anyway, but the thing is, the tournament, the Euro T20 Slam, yeah, I mean, they had no option but to postpone it. It's been riddled with controversy or there have been eyebrows raised about it from the time it was conceived. It was conceived by the same guys who organized the Global T20 League in Canada in 2019. And the most famous aspect of it from an Australian perspective was that is where Steve Smith and David Warner made their comebacks, after they were, their bans had ended. So I know at least one Australian journalist traveled. What a gig, think about it. Traveled all the way from Australia to Canada just to cover that, not the league, but just covered Warner and Smith and try to get interviews with them. So that's a gig I would have really enjoyed. I've never been to Canada. But and that tournament though was in the news for all the negative reasons. There was payment issues. There was a time when one of the teams refused to leave their hotel and go to the ground on match day. They said, unless you pay us, we won't leave. So anyway, that tournament, it was announced in 2019. It was supposed to start last year and it got postponed, like you said. And they got some big names. I mean, you look up and down the list, and Warren Deutrum is a wonderful guy. I've interviewed him in the past. The Irish Cricket Board CEO is very passionate about Irish cricket, and he's done a lot for cricket in Europe. So he comes from a genuine place. But that tournament, like I said, has had issues. The best part for me was when I heard about it, and you hear teams like representing Amsterdam and Belfast and Dublin and Edinburgh and Glasgow and Rotterdam. It's exciting. I've told you in the past, I would love to go to these places to cover cricket. Not that that's going to happen anytime soon with the world we live in. So on paper, it was good. It was the Irish, the Scottish and the Dutch boards coming together. And those three have had such strong histories of cricket. They played in various Cricket World Cups over the years. Ireland now is a test team. Scotland have defeated England in internationals. The Netherlands have defeated England in a T20 World Cup. So there is a lot of history, like I said, and they have produced players who've then gone and played county cricket as well. So and they're just the next rung after the top elite test teams. And they have been for a long time, Scotland and Netherlands especially. Though, like I said, Ireland is already a test team. So it's conceptually, it's a good idea. And like I said, going back to the players, everybody from Shahid Afridi to Brendan McCullum to Owen Morgan, World Cup winning captain, to Shane Watson, to Dale Steyn and Imran Tahir and Martin Guptill, all of Rashid Khan, of course, all of them were supposed to be part of it. They had high-profile coaches like Dan Vittori. So it looked good on paper, but there were already some eyebrows raised over it. I remember being in England when it was announced. And I remember speaking to a couple of people who were involved with it, not just as players, as coaches, but in the support staff. And they were a little skeptical as well. So it has been postponed. Like you said, maybe it gives them a chance to work out all those issues. They have spoken about how the IPL reschedule hasn't helped them either, because it meant a lot of players were taken away. So yeah, we'll have to wait and watch, Rajiv, what happens. Like I said, it's a concept that is great. It could grow. And the spread of cricket is always good news for everyone, anyone involved and those watching. But yeah, I mean, it's just didn't fit into the cricket calendar this year.
Well, you were talking about raised eyebrows, and our next topic raised a few eyebrows. AEW president and CEO Tony Khan appeared on Pardon My Take on Barstool Sports last week. On the show, he talked about AEW running shows in Jacksonville during the pandemic, but what really stood out was what he had to say about the company's May pay-per-view Double or Nothing, and I quote, "I'll tell you something, Double or Nothing last year and this year, in my opinion, was a better show than WrestleMania. I like this year's WrestleMania a lot better than last year's. They had some fans this year and everyone there worked their ass off both years. This year, I thought both were good shows. They did a two-night show and it was a good show, but I thought Double or Nothing this year was outstanding and it was the best wrestling show of the year so far." Is Tony Khan correct that Double or Nothing was better than WrestleMania? And is it the best wrestling show so far this year?
Oof. Yeah, I mean, Tony Khan really is getting into his character, isn't he, as this outspoken and really confident promotion owner, like, you know, the main man of the promotion. So he, I've spoken about this in the past when he spoke about New Japan Pro Wrestling, and I did go and get some parts of that transcript from that interview he did with Barstool. And he's actually denying any interest in becoming an on-screen character, which is, in my book, I still think this is all a build-up towards that. But some strong comments he's, I saw, like, you know, he said, I've learned from the pros and the cons. I think some of the things that went wrong for WCW were, you know, his creative control. He's even, like, named Vince Russo as having been guilty of having made things 10 times worse for WCW. He took a problem. It's like they had a massive hangnail and he just chopped off the arm. So he's been making a lot of strong statements out there. Was Double or Nothing better than WrestleMania from the wrestling sense? I guess yes. But from I don't know about the numbers. You are the numbers man, Rajiv. But in terms of scale, I still think it's very difficult to compete with WrestleMania. Maybe some of the matches were better for sure, but as a show, I don't think you can ever compare anything with WrestleMania. So, that is his opinion. And of course he has to make that opinion. He can't go out there and say that I'm the second best or we have the second best show. But yeah, interesting. Also, I mean, there were lots of other comments as well from him in that interview. I would love to watch a video of it, where, you know, he also speaks about, the major issue with other promotions having been management, like, you know, about how hands-on they were, having a supreme commander, at the top is important, but, you know, he's spoken about how that can also kind of hamstring you. So, again, he says, I've done stuff on other wrestling shows, but I don't think he's going to, and I think it's a good quote again, if he does become an on-screen character, it'll feel like you disappear up your own butt when you start writing that way, which is a good way of describing it. We've seen others struggle in the past. So, but I still think he's not angling for it, but he's just testing the waters. I will not be surprised if we see Tony Khan, not wrestling, but as an on-screen character, maybe just running down all these other promotions, starting with the WWE.
I still hope that he's not working his way to be a character, but he's making it very, very hard to believe he's not when he's outright saying that he's not trying to be a character. Yeah, I mean, as a whole, I think Double or Nothing was better than WrestleMania. The second day of WrestleMania just didn't seem to have the same flow and energy as the first night. Now, if you take the best matches from both nights and you put them next to Double or Nothing, then I think you can make an argument that WrestleMania was better, but the question was, as a whole, was it a better show? So, I also think that, AEW as it benefits from having super passionate fans. And yeah. I think that's part of what made Double or Nothing that much better was by the reactions of the fans alone. And look at the pop that Hangman Adam Page got when he came out, or when Jungle Boy won the Casino Battle Royale. Those were huge pops that you didn't really hear too many pops for during WrestleMania. And maybe it's because they were in a bigger stadium and all of the fan noise went straight up. But Daily's Place is outdoors too. It is a little bit more intimate of a space, so maybe that's why it sounded louder. But I think WWE also has a fan base that's not quite as passionate as AEW fans. They usually get the more casual fan because of their brand name, whereas I think AEW gets more of the wrestling fans. And as far as the numbers, I do think WrestleMania's numbers were bigger. And yes, of course, their production for WrestleMania is going to be so high in comparison to anything else. So in that aspect, yes, WrestleMania is better because of the production values. But as a show, Double or Nothing was better than WrestleMania.
Well, also going back to AEW having more passionate fans, I just think that it also depends on who you follow on social media. I think it has such... Because I think a lot of people we know through ad-free shows are AEW fans, and we tend to follow them and they follow people. And, like, you know, social media is such an interesting algorithm, right? Like, it gives you what you want to know. Or I think I still think there are a lot of passionate WWE fans out there, just that we don't come across them as often as we do with AEW fans. And it's the same with most young promotions, right? Like, well, you take music. When there's been a kind of music for a long, long time, and then you have like a grunge metal come through, of course there'll be like, you know, it depends on the company you hang with as well, because WWE would not be making the kind of money they are if there weren't people really passionate about it, because people need to be passionate about anything before they put their hands into their pockets. So I think at times we can get, in today's day and age, get carried away with what we hear, like what we see, but the bottom line always plays such a big role. The bottom line is that WWE still is this multi, like it's a billion-dollar industry in itself. So I wouldn't go as far as to say that WWE does not have passionate fans. It's just that we in our circle don't get to see much of them. And yeah, I mean, till the time AEW doesn't start making more money than them, I think that'll always be the fact.
Well, and to be fair, I didn't say that WWE doesn't have passionate fans. I just think AEW fans are more passionate than WWE fans. But I think you make really good points of it matters with who you follow, and it matters with what you're seeing, because it could be too that AEW fans are just more vocal than WWE fans. Maybe the WWE fan is just taking in what they see, and the AEW fan is like, oh, WWE sucks, here's why AEW is better. So it could be all kinds of things.
And just the final point is, like, when there's something new, you have to be more vocal, right? If you support something which is new, if you're a WWE fan, you don't really have to be vocal, because it's got that long a history, and it's so embedded in mainstream culture that you don't have to say anything about, like, look, like the old Conrad Thompson analogy of, like, you know, WWE is to wrestling what Coke is to cola, right? So you don't have to really hard sell WWE. Whereas with AEW, you have to shout from the bleachers. Whether you're a fan or if you're Tony Khan, Vince McMahon doesn't have to come out and say that WrestleMania was a better show, because it just assumed that WrestleMania was a better show. So but it's good that at least Tony Khan is putting himself out there and doing this. So yeah, let's wait and watch.
Speaking of putting yourself out there, the Board of Control for Cricket in India has confirmed that the T20 World Cup will be held in UAE instead of India. The BCCI Secretary Jay Shah has said that the BCCI in principle has decided on the switch and will formally communicate to the International Cricket Council of the decision. During their last board meeting, the ICC had asked the BCCI to inform them of the feasibility of hosting the tournament and gave them the deadline of June 28th to come to a decision. Brother, is this the right move by the BCCI to stay hosts of the tournament even with it not taking place in India, or should they have traded with a different host country and hosted at a later time?
I guess in many ways the BCCI had no other option, Rajiv, but to continue, like, you know, staying host, because and being host, the only advantage you have of being a host of an ICC event is you get the hosting fees. That's it. Because everything else goes to the ICC. It's still an ICC. ICC, for those who don't follow cricket, is the International Cricket Council. It's the body that administers the sport globally. And the BCCI, of course, is the Board of Control for Cricket in India. I think BCCI is a term I've used the most in my writing career, because you just have to write about BCCI so much, especially when I was in India. Anyway, that just thought came to my mind. So I think they had no other option. They left it so late as well. And, like, I don't think anyone was surprised when the news broke out that it's going to the UAE. And Oman will, of course, host the initial leg, where you had the qualifiers, Sri Lanka and Bangladesh and Netherlands and Scotland, and those guys, Ireland, will play against each other to qualify for the main event. It's just a thing that they, I think, had no other option. They had to host it technically, like, you know, they had to take it to the UAE, and the BCCI and the Emirates Cricket Board, which is also the ECB, like the ECB in England, which is the England and Wales Cricket Board. BCCI and the Emirates Cricket Board have signed a multi-year deal, 2-3 year deal last year when they took the IPL there. where they will, the UAE will be a fallback option whenever India is in a position during this pandemic where they can't host something. Like they took the whole of the IPL last year there. This year, as we well know, the second half of the IPL will be held there starting in September, which will be a precursor of sorts to the T20 World Cup. And once it became very, very obvious, which should have happened like 2 months ago, but when it did, that they will not be in a position to host that T20 World Cup, especially not across 9 centers in India right now, where they are fearing a third wave. There was no other option but to take it to the UAE. And which will mean that a lot of players involved with the IPL, mainly Indian, will be in the UAE for a long, long time, two and a half, 3 months, I guess.
Yeah, I think in theory, the idea of trading with another country would have been ideal for this sort of situation. But with the way that the world is right now, it's just too short of a notice to tell another country, hey, you're the host now. So I think this was definitely the right move. It's obviously still not safe to host in India. And I mean, the UAE's proven time and again with many different tournaments now that they have this bio bubble figured out. And as long as players don't breach that bubble, this is definitely the right move by the ICC, definitely the right move for the BCCI. I'm glad that they figured a way to work it out. And again, it's not surprising with BCCI and money being involved that something like this were to happen, because a lot of money is at play for not just this tournament, also the IPL and everything that the BCCI is doing.
BCCI and the WWE know how to make money.
Speaking of WWE, they are returning to the legendary Madison Square Garden later this year. It was revealed on June 24th by PW Insider that WWE will return to the world's most famous arena on Friday, September 10th for a live SmackDown episode. It was recently reported that the WWE had multiple holds for potential dates at the Garden for over the next year, but nothing has been set in stone until last week. Now, the September 10th date has been locked in. WWE usually runs Madison Square Garden for their annual post-Christmas non-televised live event on December 26th, but it remains to be seen if they will still keep that date this year. And what does this mean for the WWE to not only come back to MSG, but to run television there? And I think this is huge. Running TV at Madison Square Garden, as we've heard from Bruce Pritchard, we've heard from JR, it's not cheap, which is why WWE has not run many television specials there, and they usually only do live events. But this is the true home of WWE, right? So anytime they are there, whether it's televised or not, it's special. And I'm super happy for them to be going back to MSG. They get a big show out of it. Maybe they'll even bill it as a super show and have talents from both Raw, SmackDown, maybe a couple from NXT on. So that way, not only the audience, but they get their own money's worth out of it as well.
And maybe it'll be the place for a big return. Brock Lesnar, I don't know, maybe. Mm. Yeah, they generally do that whenever there's a big major event signed up. And you correctly said, I mean, the WWE is coming home in many ways. And we've heard both Bruce and Jim Ross talked about how even if it meant only breaking even or even if losing money, the Vince McMahon would always take a show to Madison Square Gardens. And firstly, I've heard Madison Square Gardens so many times about it through wrestling in the last 30 years of my life almost. I always wanted to go there. I have been to New York once in my life, but I think we were there for a day and a half. And, you know, it was back in 2013, Isha and I had been there visiting some of my brother's relatives, brother's wife's relatives, sister-in-law's relatives. We just did the usual New Yorkie stuff, but I really wanted to go to Madison Square Gardens. We couldn't fit it in, but purely because I wanted to know what this place is, like this hallowed turf, like the lords of wrestling, I guess, for WWE. Anyway, and we've heard so many stories about Vince McMahon Sr., how he had a specific point or a position where he would stand and just look at the crowd. And there's such historic moments that have taken place at MSG. So once things started opening up, it was just a matter of time, you know, once WWE hit the road, that they would end up at Madison Square Gardens. You're right. Producing TV there is not, maybe not a great financial move, but just, you know, from a morale sense and from almost, this is their way of declaring to the rest of the world and the rest of the wrestling world anyway, that we're back on top. And I think whenever that happens, whenever that show is, it'll be another big tick in the box of the, at least America for now, is returning to normal.
Most definitely. And now it is time to move on to our next segment, Fact or Fiction. I will present a topic and then we will each say whether we think it is fact or fiction and then make arguments as to why we think that is. Our first topic here is Darren Sammy joining the board will be good for Cricket West Indies. Brother, is that fact or fiction?
It's strange. It's a unique move by the Cricket West Indies, the West Indies Cricket Board, to have Darren Sammy on board, because they have had such a fascinating relationship over the years. Darren Sammy, of course, has won West Indies, or he was captain when they won two T20 World Cups, or World T20s as they were called, in 2012 and 2016. But back in 2009, he made his debut in 2007. In 2009, when a lot of the players went on strike, Darren Sammy stuck around. He did not strike with the rest of them. There were contract disputes. Not long after, he was named captain. And he was captain for quite a while. He was captain for the West Indies in Test cricket for at least 5 years before Jason Holder took over, Tests and ODIs. And he remained as T20 captain till 2016 when they won that World T20. And for the longest part, for the early part, he was known as an administration man, like a stooge, which is unfair. I've known Darren quite well for quite a few years. His following his trajectory of his life has been interesting. He's one of the nicest people I ever met in cricket. But he was always called a stooge. Even some players, younger players, would make fun of him as for being a bore, because he was a good cricketer, but he was, a lot of people wondered whether he was good enough to play Test cricket. And because he was around as captain, the likes of Kemar Roach had to wait a long time to break into that playing 11. So, and Kemar Roach has gone on to become one of West Indies' best fast bowlers in the last 20 years. After having been the administration man or the board guy for the longest time in many people's opinions, he kind of turned on the board when they won the 2016 World T20. Throughout that tournament, which was held in India, he kept talking about how the West Indies were Davids to the rest of the world's Goliaths, which was ridiculous. I remember pulling him aside and even asking him why he would say that. Nobody ever thought West Indies weren't favorites to win, but he would say that. And in a very unique move, or a strange move, when they won, generally when a team wins a World Cup, you'll be all of praise for everyone, right? It's almost like a thank you speech. He praised the players, but slammed the cricket board in front of the whole world, like in the post-match presentation ceremony, not in a closed-door press conference, but he was speaking to TV, to the world. And he spoke about how he was disrespected by the board. They won purely because of the 15 men who played the sport, and they actually put all the adversity aside, off that was put in place by the board to win. And the board president Dave Cameron had to then apologize on behalf of Darren Sammy for some reason. And that was pretty much it for Darren Sammy in West Indies cricket. And now, of course, ever since there's been a change in management with Cricket West Indies, WWE, I'm still on WWE, with Cricket West Indies, things have changed. In the last few years, a lot of players have been allowed to come back into the fold, which is what the new president said he would do. I remember interviewing him in 2019, soon after he became president, Ricky Skeleton. He said that's what he'll do. And look, they've come back. The likes of Bravo and Dwayne Bravo, your favorite Dwayne Bravo, and Andre Russell. And a lot of people, even Fidel Edwards, have come back. So Darren Sammy, of course, I don't think fits into this scheme of things anymore as a player, even though he is a captain player in some other leagues. But the fact that he's been brought on board as an independent director is an interesting move, but it also tells you that things are always changing in West Indies cricket. Nobody is ever done for good.
Yeah, I think it's a fact because of pretty much everything you're saying. He's been the administration guy. He's pointed out when the board has been less favorable to the players, and now the board knows that he's very outspoken and he will speak his mind. And I think that's going to be good, especially for Cricket West Indies. I mean, we just saw their implosion during that whole test series with South Africa. And I think Darren Sammy would be the first to come out and say, here are exactly why we lost these matches. So I think it could be good. He's also well-respected, not just by Cricket West Indies, but by other countries as well. He sort of has this coaching role already when he's playing with teams. You can see him on the field coaching people around, not just saying, hey, go over there. Hey, go to long off. Hey, silly point. So he's actually taking the time to explain to these players, hey, here's why I want you over here. You can see it on camera. He's just a wealth of knowledge, and I think that he's going to be a good addition to this board. Our next topic, Edge returning and attacking Roman Reigns after being gone since WrestleMania, is an example of great long-term booking. Is that fact or fiction? I say it's a fact. I think that by now people could have forgotten about this rivalry in particular and the story. Bringing him back and immediately going for Roman Reigns is a stroke of genius, especially in the vicious way that he did it. It reminds everybody of the intensity that this rivalry had before WrestleMania. And Edge, he has been very outspoken even before he came back. He wants a solo match with Roman Reigns. And I think this is going to be fantastic. I love the heel Roman Reigns that we have right now. I love an intense Edge. So I'm really looking forward to whenever this battle is going to happen.
Oh, an absolute hook, line, sinker fact that is. So, you know, Edge, an intense Edge, unhinged Edge, even in 2021, is always a great character. And, you know, he was the ultimate opportunist, right? When he was at his peak before the injury and his early retirement. And yeah, that's great storytelling. Where you're absolutely right. When you get the viewer to kind of just slips out of their mind, or is just about to slip out of their mind, that there was a rivalry, there was a storyline between Roman Reigns and Edge. And then you bring him back. Like, you know, it kind of has that bang impact rather than playing it up. At times, yes, you can build up someone's arrival, a surprise return or a return, or, build that anticipation. But at times, just a shock and awe moment, like Edge coming out and attacking Roman Reigns, especially at a time when Roman Reigns seemed to have reached a point where he'd beaten all comers, right? You know, he saw Cesaro, as we know. Rey Mysterio is always going to be used as an enhancement talent these days, right? In his in 2021, so it's reached a point where, yeah, I mean, they needed some strong opponent to be brought back, and they have unfinished business. And generally, these things would happen in wrestling where Roman Reigns would. It kind of happened the same way here as well, where he said, I've beaten everyone, there's no competition. That's the wrestling trope generally that get used. But it would mostly happen and then Edge would walk out and just, it would end up in a promo war. But here to see Edge come out and attack him, again, using that unhinged gimmick, just sets it up beautifully. And like you said, Edge is looking forward to that battle with Roman Reigns, which you'd believe Roman Reigns would still win, unless Edge is fit enough to have a long-term feud with him. And by long-term in 2021, I mean a 2 or 3 month-long feud. Nothing in the wrestling is long-term anymore. So, yeah, I think absolute fact.
Our next topic, Kushal Mendes, Danushka Gunatilaka, and Nirushan Dikwela, having been suspended for a bio bubble breach in the UK, makes the Sri Lanka cricket board look bad. Brother, is that fact or fiction?
The only reason I'm going to say fiction is because it doesn't make them look bad. It makes them look horrible. It's just... it's just the verbiage there, which I think makes it slightly fiction. It's just, it's sad. You think of the characters involved. Danushka Gunatilaka, firstly, full marks to you for the pronunciations. A lot of people not used to
Thank you.
Names can struggle, but that was perfect. And, you know, Danushka Gunatilaka has had a variety of off-field issues, disciplinary issues. He's been suspended in the past. But for it to happen again, the report that they just came out of the bubble for a smoke, or just, you know, and then look, and you know, you're in 2021, every phone has a camera. You have to be so careful when it comes to, and I'm not defending their rights to leave the bubble. You should not. Millions of dollars and pounds have been spent to keep players safe, to keep others safe from them, to make sure a series happen. Like, England have managed almost to pull off 1.5 successful summers now because they've spent a lot of money. And, you know, the ECB has put in so many measures at a time, like you said, the cases are rising now in the UK as well, to create that bubble. Your team is, forget about what the team has done. They've been appalling as a team. They've lost all three T20Is and they were pummeled last night in the ODI. But just to, for something so frivolous, you know, to breach a bubble of that sort and put so many people, not just at risk, but to kind of make a mockery of everyone, everyone in the ECB and the Sri Lankan Cricket Board who gone through such great measures to make this series happen. And if this series doesn't happen, you don't get paid. So you are kind of dependent on cricket happening. To kind of make a mockery of this, as three senior players, Niroshan Dikwela has been around for a while, Kusal Mendes has been around for a while, they have captained and vice-captained this Sri Lankan team. For them to do this, it's just sad and tells you that the state of affairs of Sri Lankan cricket are in a bad shape. And for anyone who wants to know more about it, should just go to, rarely do I plug for my rival website, Trick Info, but they should go and read my good friend Andrew Fidel Fernando's piece on them. He's just lashed out at them and you'll learn a lot about just how bad things are.
Yeah, it's definitely a fact that it makes them look really bad. I do like that you said fiction because it's horrible. That was a good twist. But yeah, like you said, these guys are senior players. To me, this is kind of similar to that incident with Shakib and the incident with the umpires. They should know better and they did it anyways. Would they have been caught if not for social media? I mean, we don't know. If they were caught back then with no camera, no social media, would the news have even gotten if it wasn't for social media, letting people know, hey, these guys are breaching the bubble? So this is one case of a good use of social media. I'm not a huge fan of social media. I don't believe you're a huge fan of social media either, but this is one case where I was like, oh good, I'm glad we have social media. And I mean, we all just want to be safe. This was really reckless of them. And I'm glad that the Sri Lankan Cricket Board is making an example out of them, especially because these are senior players. Sometimes they will be given more leniency, but the Sri Lankan Cricket Board was like, no, guys, absolutely not. We're sending you home and you guys are suspended. And this is showing the younger players coming up that they mean business, but this is still, as a whole, a really bad look for them. AEW Dynamite, having been on Fridays instead of Wednesdays because of basketball playoffs, hurt them. Is that fact or fiction? I think it's a fact. Fridays at 10 p.m. is an absolutely terrible time. It might be good for their brand new show if they keep the expectations low and not super high. I mean, we see the ratings. They're really, really down compared to when they were on Wednesday nights. And the move to TBS is going to be good because they won't be preempted by any other sports. It's been hard to know when exactly are they going to be on TV if you're not really paying attention to the product. If your fans drop off, especially these days, it's really hard to get them back. There's just so much TV. There's so much streaming. There's so many things that they could be doing. And I hope that they haven't lost fans because of not knowing when they're on. Wednesdays is their home base, and I hope that they stay there on TNT until they move to TBS, just to kind of get the ball rolling again and letting people know, hey, we're here on Wednesdays. We're going to move to TBS, but Wednesdays is our night. Wednesdays is our home.
That is so important, right? In today's day and age, like this podcast that we do, I mean, there's a reason you have it out. You do, Rajiv does all the hard work. I've told, said this in the past as well. I'm just a flashy add-on to the show. But you know, the reason you put it out at a specific time every week is to get people used to it. And that's the thing with any show, any, whether it's a podcast, a TV show, or unless it's live sport, of course, because you get people kind of channeled to it. Like, you know, you get them used to it. You're providing a routine for them. And you know, especially when you're a developing company like the AEW, who are established to an extent, but they're still growing their audience. It was taken away from their hand. They didn't do it intentionally. They didn't have a choice, but it definitely does affect you know, how people stay tuned in. Like you said, if people get used to that show, they know Wednesday night they have AEW Dynamite. So they adjust their routine. Now, that's how we do it with our schedules as well, right? If it's a TV show that we want to watch, especially a live show. Because these days, you can just, the only decision you need to make is to whether to click next episode or not when you're binge watching something, or when the TV asks you whether you're asleep because you watched the last seven episodes of a show. It was always going to have an impact. Like you said, hopefully for AEW's sake, they haven't lost too many people. But in a way, it's a blessing in disguise. Now they know what they are dealing with when they have Rampage, AEW Rampage on. Because, correct me if I'm wrong, it's going to be run at the same time, on a Friday. Friday, 10 correct. p.m. You know more about American culture than I do, but I don't know whether that's the time of the week when people spend a lot of time watching TV. So it's maybe a dress rehearsal of sorts, and to tell them a lot. Like, you know, Eric Bischoff speaks about how they used to do, just have surveys of people, find out what sells and what doesn't sell. This is having a live example. Like, just they've had a show and one of their most successful marquee shows. So it'll be interesting. I personally have, because they've had it on Friday night in the US, I've had it here on Saturday, and the weekend is when I spend time with Isha. So I've not watched it. So I've missed the last few weeks of AEW Dynamite, and I can't wait for it to be back on Wednesday.
And now it is time for terms and conditions with our resident expert, Bharat Sundaresan. Now, I don't believe we've talked about this yet, and it's our 10th episode now, so what better time to do it than now? Brother, what is a chop on in cricket?
Well, yeah, 10-week anniversary, Rajiv. Congratulations to you.
Congrats to you as well.
Thank you so much, brother. Yeah, well, I mean, the chop on in cricket has nothing to... Nobody chops on in cricket and goes, woo, because that doesn't happen. It is not a Ric Flair thing. Nobody is targeting anybody's chest with the back of their hand. It's actually the simplest fact, terms and condition or term that you've given me to explain. I will not require to go into the weeds. There's no history to it. A chop on basically is when a batsman plays on to his stumps. And a play on is basically one of the 10 ways of getting out in cricket is to be clean bowled. It's when the stumps are knocked down. And we've spoken about stumps and bails in the past. So a clean bowled is when the ball makes contact with the stumps at the batting end without touching anything, without touching the batsman's body or his bat. A chop on is when there is a deflection, and especially a deflection of the bat. Only when there's a deflection of the bat. Because the ball can hit the stumps after hitting his pad, his part of his body, or we've even seen hit his helmet and the helmet fly. Adam Parore was bowled out by Brett Lee once many years ago. But a chop-on is when the ball hits the edge of your bat and it hits the stumps and you're clean bowled, which basically the term you'd hear the commentator or a reporter being using is to say that he's chopped on. He's chopped on to his stumps. So it does not involve a tree. It does not involve Ric Flair. It does not involve a woo. It does not involve anyone's chest. It's just a simple way of getting out. There you go.
Well said, brother. And now an interesting term that I came across this week that I don't think we've talked about either, but it comes up a lot, especially for enhancement matches. What is a jobber in professional wrestling?
Well, a jobber is Barry Horowitz. Yeah, that's selling period.
Yes, yes.
Or the Brooklyn Brawler. I think but the Brooklyn Brawler won more than Barry Horowitz.
I think you might be right.
Yeah, right. Yeah. So, and just going back in time, I did some research. So the term job, basically, the simplistic meaning of the term job in pro wrestling is to lose. And why is it called a job? Because when you get into a fight, in a real fight, the only intention in your head is not to lose. But in pro wrestling, because it's scripted, if Rajiv and I, going back to last week's analogy, like, you know, I want to get into the wrestling ring for a fight. And if my job is to lose, then I'm doing a job. I'm doing the job, not just of losing, but of protecting kayfabe. And kayfabe is another term we've spoken about in the past. Look at our archives. It's about protecting the, or now it's gone. Kayfabe is long gone, but it's about protecting the secrets of wrestling. And this, one of the first secrets of wrestling is someone losing intentionally or someone knowing that they're going to lose and still losing. And that was called doing a job. The term jobber basically was the jobber was a wrestler who would lose regularly to make sure that the top tier wrestlers get easy wins out of their way before they have like a big clash against a big opponent. And back in the day, stars wouldn't go up against each other every week, like we see now in wrestling, not just on WWE, on AEW, on every other wrestling platform, or what we've been seeing in the last 15, 20 years, in the 70s, in the 80s, and even in the 90s. The weekly shows would be all about your top stars just, running roughshod over some jobber. At times, you'd have an enhancement talent, but the enhancement talent is a term we leave for a future episode. It's completely different to being a jobber. A jobber is not technically a loser, but in a way, it's a polite way of saying loser. So someone who just loses a lot. And jobber would be used to just get pounded. George South is one name we hear a lot from the 1980s, thanks to Tony Schiavone and What Happened When. Barry Horowitz, I said, in the 90s. So you have to put on a show, but you don't want your two stars clashing weekly, and you need to build up that story. So what do? You put them in a ring against a no name or a name like Barry Horowitz, who will lose, and you get them to lose. And wherein the audience gets to see a lot of the moves of the star, they get well versed with who this person is, who this gimmick is, who this character is. And then you see him wrestle against bigger names, people at his or her own level. And they play a very crucial role, or they used to back in the day. And a lot of them you hear and ended up running wrestling schools, so to lose is often, how you lose means so much more in wrestling than how you win. Because like I said, doing the job means you are the one losing. You are the one doing the job. The winner is just there to, get the 1-2-3. So you are actually the greater performer in many ways. So the jobber also historically would be a heel, so that the crowd could also hate him mainly, and he would mainly be in squash matches with the baby faces mainly, and with Barry Horowitz would also meant that some jobbers would become stars in their own right just for losing. And the one time Barry Horowitz win, it just became like a big event. There is also something called, some people also end up being made to job or become jobbers as punishment. Triple H being the most famous, I guess, after the curtain call incident where the clique came together in the ring. And for all our wrestling fans, you know what I'm talking about. For our cricket fans, it's when kayfabe was broken. Razor Ramon, Scott Hall, Diesel, Kevin Nash, Shawn Michaels, Michael Hickenbottom, and Triple H, who was what, John Paul Levesque, came together in the ring when they were good guys and bad guys, and hugged inside a cage, actually, the day before Razor Ramon and Diesel left for WCW. As a result, somebody had to be punished. Shawn Michaels was a superstar, so you couldn't punish him. 1-2-3 Kid, X-Pac wasn't around. And so Triple H was the only one they could punish. So he was made to job to the likes of Ultimate Warrior and a lot of other guys. And this push, as Jim Ross loves to say, which would have ended up in him winning the King of the Ring in 96, and which eventually went to Stone Cold Steve Austin, and Austin 316 said he whooped your ass, was delayed by a year. I think it didn't alter wrestling history in any way. I think it enhanced wrestling history. And 1-2-3 Kid I spoke about. Yeah, he was just the kid before he beat Razor Ramon in one of the most famous upsets in wrestling history. And because he won 1-2-3, he became 1-2-3 Kid. And then he became X-Pac and he became a superstar in his own right. So jobbers used to play a big role. We don't see too many jobbers anymore, but you do see high-profile wrestlers turn into jobbers. We've seen, and at some level, the likes of R Truth, who does have a 24/7 title now, he's one example, and so many others who we've seen that you lamented about, who come from NXT and just don't make it. Lots of tag teams, like ascension I can remember. And, you know, FTR had become a jobbing tag team for a long time in on the WWE roster, unfortunately. So it still continues, but not to the extent or not in the same manner in which they were treated in the 70s and 80s.
Well said, brother. Well said. And now it's time to go over the ropes. This is where we go over the ropes of the present back into the past. And I'm going to go back a ways. 60 years ago today, the match of the century, Pat O'Connor would defend the NWA World's Heavyweight Championship against Nature Boy Buddy Rogers. The match took place at Kaminsky Park in Chicago, Illinois on June 30th, 1961. It was a turning point in wrestling history at the time. Pat O'Connor was an amateur wrestling champion from New Zealand and represented his country in the Pan American Games in 1948 and the British Empire Games in 1950. In North America, he made his way up the ranks with determination after training with Len Levy. O'Connor would claim the NWA world title after defeating Dick Hutton at Kiel Auditorium in St. Louis on January 9th, 1959. Buddy Rogers had been wrestling since 1939, working as Dutch Road while still working as a police officer in New Jersey. After taking the Nature Boy Buddy Rogers moniker in Texas, his career really took off. When wrestling entered living rooms via the Dumont Network, Rogers became one of the biggest names in not just wrestling, but in sports. Working primarily out of Columbus, Ohio for years, Rogers was a regular in Chicago and routinely sold out the International Amphitheater. This particular match with O'Connor and Rogers drew a staggering 38,622 fans, a record for attendance that stood for pro wrestling in North America for many years until WrestleMania III in 1987 topped them all. The ticket sales of $148,000 would remain a pro wrestling record for nearly two decades. Fortunately, a tape of the match does still exist, which you can find on YouTube, and it was even broadcast on ESPN Classic's Golden Age of Wrestling. They billed it the Match of the Century, and it was a 2 out of 3 falls affair with a 1 hour time limit. At ringside was Rogers' manager, Bobby Davis. In the first fall, Rogers would score a pinfall win when he caught a charging O'Connor with a knee lift in the corner. And in the second fall, O'Connor took control with a series of headlocks and punches and rolled Rogers up with a reverse cradle. In the heat for the third fall, built throughout the stadium, it looked as if O'Connor was going to retain his title, manhandling Rogers for much of that third fall. The New Zealander went for a drop kick but missed, landing on his head. He was rolling around the ring, holding onto his ribs, and the Nature Boy jumped at the opportunity and covered O'Connor for the pin and the win. As the NWA champ, Rogers drifted out of the promotion's traditional control and took many more northeastern United States bookings than previous champions had. He was influenced in large part by the bright lights of New York and the charm of Vince McMahon Sr. He only had one rematch with Pat O'Connor as well on September 1st, 1961 at Kaminsky Park, which was won again by Rogers in three falls. And that is the match of the century. What'd you think of that, brother?
That is incredible. Yes. And just for our listeners, I did not know what was coming. Rajiv said there's a surprise up his sleeve. So I am listening to this for the first time, just like you are. And I did not know that. And first takeaway, New Zealanders aren't good at best of three finals. So maybe Virat Kohli did have a point. But, you know, it just tells you how so many things. A, that wrestling has been around for a long, long time. And it's always, it can come across as being an American pastime in many ways, but it's been around globally for so long. I was reading a book recently, Rajiv, a wonderful book, one of like Australia's most famous books called Power to Glory. It's about a man written in the 40s, I think, or 50s, and about a man who grows up to be, it's fictional, semi-fictional, about a man called John West, who comes from the poorest suburbs of Melbourne, in somewhere near Collingwood, and grows to be this wheeler dealer in politics and horse racing and all that. So one section, like at one point when he's this rich man, he's dabbling in all sorts of illegal activities. One thing he does is run pro wrestling in the 1930s in Australia. And I was very, very intrigued by that. And the fact that Pat O'Connor came from New Zealand and was NWA World Heavyweight Champion, who would have thunk it? I thought apart from the Bushwhackers, nobody else came from wrestling into wrestling from New Zealand. But and also the move seemed to be so simple, right? The first fall was just a knee to the corner, knee to the face in the corner and an inside cradle. But just listening to you describe it, I could really, and you did it so well that I could picture the atmosphere there, right? You know, building up to that third fall. So it tells you that, storytelling in wrestling was as strong then as it should be now. Unfortunately, it isn't. But that build up seems to be great. And Nature Boy Buddy Rogers then went on to pass on the moniker to Nature Boy Ric Flair, and look where Ric Flair has taken it ever since. So no, if it's on YouTube, the first thing I'm doing after we say goodbye is making myself a cup of coffee and sitting and watching that game. Match.
I will send you the link as soon as we are done here, so that way you can check it out. And thank you all for checking us out here on Chop On. We really appreciate all the love and support that we have received. If you have any feedback for us, please let us know. We are on Twitter and Instagram at Chop On Pod. Brother, do you have any last words for our listeners before we head out of here this week?
Yeah, I'm so glad that you've stuck with us. Like, we've stuck with each other for 10 weeks now. It's a long time in my world, 10 weeks. And Rajiv has kept me on the straight and narrow. I'm like, he's brought discipline to my life. And I hope we brought some discipline to your lives, because I'm sure you just wait every Thursday to just press play and listen to us talk about cricket and wrestling and bring two worlds together. And we've gone 10 weeks of doing it, and we'll continue doing it for another 10 weeks and another 10 years, maybe. So yeah, keep listening, keep chopping on, people, like Rajiv likes to say.
Yes, and if we do keep it going, just follow us on Instagram and Twitter at Chop On Pod. And on Twitter, he is at BeastieBoy07. I am at the Rajiv8. And like Buddha just said, keep chopping on, people.